We're now on tape 6, side B of Family-Based Youth Ministry course. We're picking up on a lecture that began on the other side. We're talking about the implementation process. I'm going to identify the four foundational components, areas that you can develop programming in for Family-Based Youth Ministry. We're going to start with worship. Teenagers' involvement in worship of the church often yields more significant long-term results than does the most active involvement in the youth program or the Sunday school. For that reason alone, finding ways to involve young people and their parents in the church's life of worship is imperative. Some churches have incredibly engaging worship services to which young people are drawn. But the average worship experience is, we have to admit, less than compelling for most teenagers. But there's something about sitting in worship that's like having a regular place to sit at the family dinner table. Whether the food is what you would have ordered or not, eventually you grow to like it. And you know that you have a place where you belong. Whether young people sit with their parents or in the youth section or in the choir, their involvement in worship is crucial to their own growth toward mature Christian adulthood. Because it's in worship that young Christians, week after week, can offer God praise, confess their sins, hear from God's Word, and offer themselves in a deeper way to serve God. It's in worship and through the sacraments of God's people that teenagers gain a sense of their connection to a rich family tradition. As you have picked up through the stories I've told, I grew up going to church on a fairly regular basis. And I, when I was in high school, went to a Young Life camp and really heard the gospel in a way that I grasped for the first time. And as soon as I did, I, in a pretty unusual way, as I look at how my friends responded, in a pretty unusual way, I responded with real eagerness to the gospel. And I began to pursue my faith with a peculiar sort of passion. And for years after that, as I went through high school and began college, I was angry that my home church, had never, quote, shared the gospel with me, that I'd never really heard the gospel in the church. You know, as I've had the time to look back and reflect on that experience, it occurs to me that the reason that I pursued the gospel with such a passion and chose to pursue my faith in such an eager way was because I had grown up. It was as if, and I may have shared this previously, it was as if the experience of liturgy and worship and going through the same messages over and over again each week became a part of who I was, so that when I heard and understood the gospel, there was a place prepared for that very response. Churches have attempted, some of them have attempted to appeal to teenagers by altering their worship services, changing the style of music or increasing the variety and decreasing the length of the sermons. During my teenage year, my pastor would ask us frequently what we would like to see changed about the worship service. And to his credit, he tried almost all of our ideas. But I can't say that even one of those changes made much difference in my appreciation for worship. The older I get, the more I see the wisdom in Soren Kierkegaard's theater analogy for worship. You remember that although we tend to view the preacher as the performer and God as the prompter and the congregation as the audience, Kierkegaard portrayed it differently. He argued that in genuine worship, God is the audience, and the preacher is simply the prompter for the congregation, who are the real performers, the real actors. If we simply try to appeal to teenagers by making our worship easier or more entertaining, we may end up tacitly teaching them that their role in worship is to be passive spectators. Implementing family-based youth ministry in worship is simply a matter of finding ways for teenagers to grow into meaningful involvement in the worship of the whole community. Here are a few suggestions. And I've got 117 here. I may come up with a few more, but I'm going to start with 10 suggestions for worship. Number one, youth readers. Many churches have a regular tradition of using a young person to read scripture in each service. Number two, leading prayers. A church could invite different youth to lead the congregation in prayer during the service. Pastors could take this opportunity to work with a number of different teenagers during the year. Number three, ushers. Teenagers can work with a team of adult ushers on Sunday mornings, taking the collection and passing out bulletins and so on. Again, I think it's imperative that we understand that the idea is to connect kids with adults in the process, not to give them a token sort of youth experience that's isolated from the connection with adults. Traditionally, many churches have what's called Youth Sunday, and on that Sunday, the youth are in charge of the worship service. Well, although I think that's a valuable thing to do, I would love to see more integration between, for example, with the ushers, that the youth and the adults would usher together, rather than this being the Sunday that the youth usher and the adults have off. Number four, sing in the youth choir. Although the youth choir does isolate teenagers, it gives them an opportunity to contribute as a group to the total church. The youth choir can also teach the entire congregation a style of worship music that is significant to the young people of the church. Number five, young people could sing in the adult choir. Young people can greatly benefit from singing alongside adults. An adult choir mentor for each teenager in the choir would be the best of all possible worlds there. Number six, Sunday school classes writing the liturgy. The summer months might be a great time to let teenagers pick the scripture lessons and the hymns and write the prayers and any other readings all related to the sermon topic for the day. Number seven, greeters. Teenagers could serve with adults, greeting people as they come in worship. Or even in the parking lot. Teenagers could be the parking lot greeters and have walkie-talkies and help folks know where there are available parking spots. Number eight, minutes for mission. Teenagers can report to the congregation about their mission experiences representing the church family. Number nine, the youth service, as I've suggested earlier. Many churches set aside one Sunday a year or more for youth to plan and lead the service. Obviously, though there is some isolation there, the very fact that they are putting the service on for the entire congregation connects them in that way. I like to say with our teenagers, as they're planning their youth worship service, that their purpose is to engage this group of people in worship. It's as if they are missionaries to a different culture. The purpose is not for them to have a show of all of the things that they think are important, but it is to connect with the people who are there and engage them in worship in some way. Number 10, commissioning services. Before youth and their leaders leave for mission trips, they can be commissioned in the church's worship service and prayed for specifically by the members of the congregation. So that's the worship component. Second is mission and service. More and more public and private schools are finding that active involvement in serving others is an important prerequisite for a complete education. More and more, the students I work with have been volunteering through their schools to work at the soup kitchen or collect toys for poor children or any of a number of service-oriented activities. The church doesn't need to duplicate the activities its teenagers will be involved in with other groups. The contribution that the church can make is to provide a place where youth and adult Christians work alongside each other in volunteer service. It's too easy for young people who grow up in churches with active youth mission programs to learn that Christian service is something teenagers do, something like proms and student government, and that they can expect to grow out of it. Youth-centered service teams can, in fact, create passivity in teenagers who have learned to react by signing up for the mission project that was marketed the most effectively. In our church, we actually have established an adult mission board that in many ways has grown out of the youth ministry. What we have said is we think it's important for our kids to see adults doing missions. And so a couple years ago, we began sponsoring a trip to Jamaica with one of the adult men who took our kids to Jamaica. Then he started taking adults as well. Obviously, genuine Christian service is very different from responding to calculated group motivation. Christian service is proactive, not reactive. At least part of the formula for teenagers becoming proactive in serving is to allow our youth to see Christian adults living out their faith through service as well. Since parents are the primary faith shapers for their children, any of the following activities will be strengthened by involving parents along with the young people. One of the problems with family-based youth ministry is that most parents think of youth ministry with the traditional model in mind. They're all in favor of their children doing service project because it, quote, builds character. But they're often less aware of their own need for developing a serving lifestyle. But unless the parents model this kind of behavior as normal for Christian adults, chances are their children will grow out of the serving habit as well. Most of the ideas that I'll share here are simply a matter of plugging youth and adults into existing benevolent projects that the church normally sponsors. The only distinction is that instead of encouraging adults to volunteer alone, family-based youth ministry advocates that whole families take on some of these projects together, and that teenagers and adults work alongside each other. So here we go. We'll start with number 11. Habitat Workday. Most communities now have programs for building low-income housing with volunteer labor. Youth groups have been doing this kind of thing for years, and it can be even better with parents involved with their teenage children or adults involved with the teenagers in the church. Number 12, Vacation Bible School. Often teenagers are recruited to lead Vacation Bible School, so why not match them up with adults in the church to lead the younger children? Number 13, Soup Kitchen. The local soup kitchens are always looking for volunteers to serve meals. We can encourage families or groups of adults and youth to serve together. 14. Experience homelessness. If your church does a room at the inn type program that houses homeless people during the winter months, encourage parents or mentors and teenagers to spend the night together with the homeless. If your church doesn't have this kind of program, certainly some church or agency in the city does. 15. Food or care packages for the homeless. You can allow groups of families to volunteer to prepare food or packages, care packages for homeless, or to create periodic programs for adults and youth to serve together. Number 16, a family mission trip anywhere in the United States, just like a youth mission trip, except this would be with families. A family international mission trip. Our church typically sends a group of adults, youth, and children each year to build low-income housing in Mexico. The children and youth seem to get much more out of the program that's not directed at them. Adopt a grandparent. Number 18. Entire families or mentor partners could link up with an elderly person in the church or the community. Number 19. Visit nursing homes. Number 20. A weekend family mission trip. For example, in the recent floods that have been sweeping across the country, simply getting a group of people on a short term, driving a few hours, and going helped with flood victims. 21. Adopt international students. Every town with a college nearby is likely to have a number of international students who are in need of American friends. 22. Visit a children's hospital. 23. Sort clothes for a local clothes closet. 24. Sort food for a local food pantry. 25. Adopt a missionary through prayer and letters and financial support. 26. Participate by families in the church's fundraising efforts, stewardship, one great hour of sharing, or 2 cents a meal kind of programs. Number 27. Deliver meals on wheels together. 28. Find a need and meet it. In every community and church, families can come up with ways to serve an immediate need, for example, to put together care packages for families of a person having transplant surgery, visit AIDS patients, re-roof the minister's house. Education. Education is the third area. Typically, our Christian education activities are segregated by ages. This arrangement is certainly efficient for the church, but in the long run, it may rob young people of much-needed opportunities to learn with adult Christians. In our church, a number of teenagers have chosen to be involved in adult Sunday school classes. I have to admit that often their choosing not to be involved in the youth class is a bit deflating to my ego. But in my better moments, I know that what they're gaining through their interaction with Christian adults is of much more value than their being a part of a well-attended youth Sunday school class. I'm not, though, advocating that we do away with Christian education opportunities for teenagers separate from adults. As I suggested in Chapter 9, we must recognize teenagers' need to establish a faith distinct from that of their parents. My philosophy of Christian education involves a combination of teaching youth the basics of Christian literacy in creative weekly classes, and then offering short-term opportunities for youth and parents to learn together. At our church, each of our 6 classes, as I've suggested before, participates in its own 3- or 4-week course with parents and teenagers together. The focus of these classes is not so much informational as it is bridge-building, giving teenagers repeated opportunities to know an extended family of Christian adults. So here's how we've outlined our youth parent courses for the year. Normally these happen in October or November. We do them for 3 weeks. The 7th grade does a course on community building. The 8th grade does a course on drugs and alcohol. The 9th grade does a course on sexuality. And the 10th grade tackles communication. The 11th grade works on decision making. And the 12th grade focuses on preparing for college or independence. And most of these courses actually are in the curriculum called Bridges that InterVarsity has done. A family-based youth ministry also provides educational opportunities for parents. In research for their book, The Five Cries of Parents, Merton and Irene Stroman asked over 10,000 parents which topics had much interest, in learning about. Short-term courses on these types of concerns can be foundational in curriculum development for parents of youth. 70% wanted to learn how to help a child develop healthy concepts of right and wrong. 60% they wanted to know how to help a child grow in religious faith. 66% about drugs. 62% how to communicate better with one's children. 47% effective discipline. 44% sex education. 42% how to participate in a parent support group. A family-based youth ministry offers classes on themes related to the families for teenagers. For example, dealing with your parents without losing your mind. Or for parents. Or, for example, the Understanding Your Teenager course. Or for parents and youth together, and for teenagers with other adults in the church. We found that the most effective youth curricula are usually adaptable to groups with youth and adults together. So what I've done is come up with a list of ideas that's a sampling of possible programs. Most of these programs can work in various settings. They can work in Sunday school or Sunday night or small groups in homes. They can be Wednesday night programs. But here we go. I want to start with a list of classes for parents and teenagers together. You can do a parent-teenager course on using the Serendipity Bible. It's number 29 in our list. Number 30, a parent-teen course on the basics of the Christian faith and discipleship, or what I call a bonehead Bible course. Number 31, a parent-teenager course using the life skills curriculum. There's a specially positive one called Online, published 5 or 6 years ago by the United Methodist Publishing House. 32, a parent-youth course on sexuality. 33, on drugs and alcohol. 34, on music. For example, using the material in Learn to Discern by Bob DeMoss. 35, a parent-teen course on decision-making. 36, on decision-making. 37, on community building. The Serendipity material called Beginnings is a good 6-week course there. 38, a parent-teen course on any Christian education topic. 39, with teenagers and grandparent age members on any Christian education topic. Number 40, a movie night with parents and teenagers watching a Christian movie together. 41, a concert with parents and teenagers attending a Christian concert together. 42, now we're going to talk about parenting class ideas. A parenting class using the book Raising Self-Reliant Children in a Self-Indulgent World by Stephen Glenn and Jane Nelson that I've mentioned several times. A parenting class on understanding your teenager, or even bring in the youth specialties folks to do that. Number 44, a parenting class on how to talk to your child about sexuality. 45, a parenting class on youth culture today. Of course, Walt Mueller at the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, who's written the book Understanding Today's Youth Culture, is a great source there. 46, a parenting class on conflict management in the home. 47, a parenting class on drug and alcohol abuse prevention. 48, a parenting class called Finding Mentors for Your Children, or what I might call Stacking the Stands for Your Kids. 49, Parenting Adolescents. It's a video series and a book by Kevin Huggins, a book that I've quoted several times here in the course. Number 50, parenting class using the Active Parenting of Teens video series. 51, a parenting class on building faith in your family. 52, a parenting class on what's hot and what's not, having a panel of youth answering parents' questions. Then I have a number of ideas for a dads-only group. A small group, we've done these on Wednesday nights very effectively. A dads-only class studying the book called The Dad Difference. I'll give you a number of books that could be studied. Number 54, studying Ordinary Private World by Gordon MacDonald. Number 55, studying Celebration of Discipline by Richard Foster. Or 56, The Man in the Mirror by Patrick Morley. Or a dads-only support group. We had a group like this grow out of our Wednesday night dads groups that actually began to meet every other week for breakfast, choosing their own books to study. You can have a single father's class, ideally led by a Christian single father, or a single father support group. We're down to number 60 now. Moms-only classes, using books chosen by the mothers. For example, Almost 13 by Claudia Arp. I don't have many recommendations in this area, having never participated in a mom's group myself, but my wife tells me that there are plenty of resources available. Or 61, a moms-only support group. 62, a short-term divorce recovery course for parents. Youth Specialties has a divorce recovery course 63, a short-term divorce recovery course for teenagers. That's the one you specialize in. It could be led either in conjunction with the course for parents, as we've done here in Nashville, or separately only with teenagers. 64, a support group for teenagers from divorced families. Or a 65, a support group for blended families. 66, we've got a game called the Family Red Game, which is a fun variation of the Newlywed Game that lets parents and their teenage children predict how each other will answer humorous questions. 67, pick your own leader, pick your own teacher. The idea here is to let each Sunday school class pick four speakers to come to their class and teach on assigned topics for those weeks, thus exposing our teenagers to a variety of adults in the church and giving the youth Sunday school teacher a much-needed break. 68, role play a variety of confidentiality dilemmas. 69, a panel of experts. This idea is more of an educational method and can be used in a variety of settings. The method allows a group of teenagers, a group of parents, or a group of families to serve as a panel of experts to respond to questions and create discussion. 70, the materials called one-on-one and talk sheets by Youth Specialties both include great discussion starters for teens and their parents. Number 71, Lenten and Advent devotionals written by parents and or youth. And 72, the Parents in Transition seminars for parents of junior higher, high schoolers, or collegians. Now, just a word about support groups. Support groups for families in crisis are clearly not the place to begin a family-based youth ministry. The potential volatility of these sort of situations demands that they be led by a well-trained and experienced facilitator. Now, our fourth major area is the area of recreation, or just having fun together. By providing our teenagers with recreational opportunities with adults in the church, we can infuse them with hopefulness and enthusiasm about becoming adults. Often the only exposure that teenagers have to adults is as serious and didactic authorities. Many teenagers never get to laugh with adults. We begin our Sunday school program each week with an assembly that involves a couple songs, a few announcements by a resident clown, and a lot of laughter. Every now and then, I see out of the corner of my eye one of the teachers eyeing his or her watch as if to say, "We got important business to do. We can't stay here playing." But in many ways, teaching our children to laugh with instead of at adults is an essential part of our curriculum. For this reason, recreation that joins adults and teenagers together is not an option, but essential for helping our teenagers grow to mature Christian adulthood. The general principle is that almost any recreation can be done with teenagers. That can be done with teenagers, can be done with teenagers and adults together. Here are a few ideas. And I'm not going to number these, but you'll know. I'll tell you where I am when I get finished. Any kind of parent-teen competition. A volleyball game, a softball game, a high ropes course, bungee jumping, bowling, snow skiing together, water skiing, crazy games like in the ideas books, or non-competitive games like in the new games books. A bonfire, an intergenerational song exchange, a hayride, a dance, a bike trip, superstars competition, a concert, a progressive dinner, a picnic, capture the flag or German spotlight, a video game night or board game night, lock-in or lock-out. Actually, our best lock-ins or lock-outs have been when I have said, "You can't come to this lock-out unless we've got 10 of your parents that are willing to stay up all night with you." A cookout, a talent show, rappelling or caving. That got us to 99. Now, I do have a collection of just sort of miscellaneous ideas that can help you. And again, what I'm suggesting is that this whole idea of implementing a family-based youth ministry is a 3 or 4 year process. So I don't want you to feel overwhelmed that you need to be doing all of these things, but simply that you choose one or two and do them very well in the first year, and then build on that as the years go on. Working with the four categories of worship, missions, education, and recreation is certainly a simple way to get a family-based youth ministry off the ground. The youth minister or the youth planning team can easily pick one activity from each category for the first year, in addition to one activity from the miscellaneous list below. Each year, a new family-based event and program can be added, and old programs revised until the church is investing as much time and energy in family-based programming as it is in programming geared exclusively to teenagers. It's important to understand that family-based youth ministry is more of an attitude than a programming strategy. The following ideas are things that don't fit neatly into any of the other four categories, but can clearly help move a church's ministry in the direction of family-based youth ministry. Number 100. Have a parent's book table with books and other resources that can be checked out or bought. 101. Have a parent's bulletin board with information about upcoming events, pictures of past events, and highlights of the present programs for parents. Number 102, a parent's newsletter. Most youth ministries send a regular newsletter to their teenagers, but very few teenagers keep calendars or newsletters. Why not send the newsletter to the people who control the family calendar, to the parents, every other month or so? Recently, I don't know if they still do, but Campus Life Magazine's Leader Edition used to have a page in each issue that could be photocopied as a newsletter to parents of teenagers that had informative statistics and stories and information. Number 103, Elder Friends. Many churches have a program in which the offers of the church are matched up with young people as they're going through the confirmation process. Number 104, a mentoring program. Here, interested teenagers could be matched with trained adults in the church for one-on-one friendship building over the process of the year. Again, we've talked a lot about the mentoring possibilities and the liabilities. Number 105, the 70-plus club or adopt-a-grandparent. Some older adults have a tremendous ability to relate to teenagers. They also tend to have a great deal of free time. They can be used as youth leaders, Sunday school teachers, or mentors. We might even call them the Simeon and Anna patrol. You know, those older people early in the New Testament who blessed the child Jesus. 106, taking parents to lunch. One youth pastor friend of mine makes it a habit to take the dads of his teenagers in the church out to lunch at least once during the year, one at a time, to ask them to share the dreams they have for their sons and daughters. He hasn't had a quiet lunch yet. Number 107, teaching parents how to build Christian community for their children by inviting youth leaders, pastors, missionaries, and Sunday school teachers over for dinner. Number 108, using parents on the youth committee. And most of us have a youth ministry committee of some kind that has the administrative responsibilities to approve and give support and direction to the program. Number 109, a parents' roundtable. This would be just a weekly support group for parents of teenagers. Number 110, a parents' committee. As a family-based youth ministry gets going, it may be helpful to develop a committee of parents who would just meet together to give counsel and encourage other parents' involvement. Number 111, class parents. This could be like a room mother. A mother or father in each class who is responsible for planning and organizing that class's special events. Number 112, parent team planning potlucks. One year we began with a different planning time for each grade. The parents and teenagers met together and planned the special events for their class for the year. Number 14, an annual open letter from teenagers to parents. What we could do is solicit input from teenagers in Sunday school, and then the youth leader can compile that letter and send that to all the parents from all the young people out in the next newsletter. And then, of course, just the opposite. 114 would be an annual open letter from parents to teenagers. 115, preaching on relationships between parenting and discipleship. 116, camping experiences. Young Life has recently developed a camp program, a family camp program. Doug Burley, the past president of Young Life, has said, "Over the years, we've learned that you just don't isolate a kid and minister just to him or her. Kids come in the context of family, so it makes sense to take our beautiful facility at Trail West and minister in a broader context." And then 117, Group Magazine's Parent of Teenagers magazine can be a helpful resource. Oh, now I've only got 116 ideas because you may remember that I wrote the cover article for the very last Parent of Teenagers magazine, and they're now out of business after receiving that great article. As perhaps the only institution left designed and equipped to work with entire families, churches today face an unparalleled opportunity not only to reach teenagers, but to impact entire families. But unless we make a shift in direction, the long-term return on our investment in youth ministry will be disappointing. Those churches that choose to place their emphasis on empowering the family and the extended family of the church to do the work of youth ministry may be in for a wild ride, but the return on this kind of investment can be rich indeed. Let me give you just a few implications for ministry as we wrap up. One is, after establishing a prayer team for the church's youth ministry, the first step would logically be for a team of parents and leaders to establish the priorities. For example, a priority might be to increase the number of opportunities youth in our church have to build friendships with Christian adults. But they would establish the priorities for the coming year and turn those priorities into specific objectives. For example, to establish a mentoring program that matches each of our young people with Christian adults in the church. Number two, early in the first year, this planning team can pick a modest number of programs to experiment with. I recommend one idea from each of the four categories. Again, I think particularly early on, it is imperative not to try to go too quickly and to do one or two, maybe three or four, but not too quickly. Number three, the team can expect that at least one of the ideas of, say, if you try four, at least one will not fit with the parents and youth in your particular church. Maintaining a vision for family-based youth ministry does not mean that all the programs will be successful. It does mean that the church will continue to try a variety of programs that can help the church faithfully lead young people toward mature Christian adulthood. And then here's the wildest hair of all. Use family-based youth ministry as a resource for training your youth teachers, your mentors, your youth committee members, and your church leadership. Well, that sums up the course on family-based youth ministry, and I'm grateful that you have taken the time to work through this process. If you have other questions or you'd like to raise other issues or you'd like to be on a mailing list, I'm happy for you to write me at 4815 Franklin Road, Nashville, Tennessee, 37220. I have an email address, which is mrkdevries, D-E-V-R-I-E-S, at AOL.com. And sometimes it takes me a while to get back, but hopefully I'd be able to respond to you if you have an interest in pursuing other topics along these lines. Thank you for the investment that you have made in this course and the investment you will be making in young people. Blessings on you.